worlds colliding this week. We're going to get out this big mixing bowl and we're going to throw everything in. Cookbooks, a topic of conversation. Never happened before on the Chirp. We're going to talk Stanley Cup playoffs, collectibles, bobbleheads, wrestling, WWE, and a dream TNT panel with the rights going over to Turner. A pal of mine, Patrick Sharp, is on the program, and broadcaster Renee Paquette stops by the podcast. And I also make one of them pick up the camera and show us around the room. Second time I've done that to a guest, and it's awesome. The Chirp is next.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
What are you going to do? You!
You guys are sensitive over there.
Shut up.
It's the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard. No episode number this week. We're going to forego that. This show is simply going to be called Beauties and the Beast. You'll understand it here. Renee Paquette, fellow Canuck, lives here in Las Vegas. She has more jobs than I have fingers, pops by, and we're going to see if we can find her another gig. But we open the show with Patrick Sharp, a Stanley Cup champion turned broadcaster. The playoffs are our main topic of conversation. But at the end of the interview, I get him to pick up the camera and show us his bobblehead collection, which also includes all of his hardware, like three Stanley Cup trophies and a whole bunch more. Patrick Sharp is on the Chirp. Before we get into it, what's the picture behind you? Like, what is that thing? One giant storm?
I know. I keep telling people I presume it's just a virtual background. But yeah, I don't know what it is. We're in Connecticut on the East Coast. So maybe it has something to do with that. I'm looking at it now. It does look kind of funny. I thought you were going to talk about these guys
Who are those guys?
Well, we got Coach Q in the middle.
Yeah.
I think in the back. Let me take a look. Yeah, that's Stan Mikita in the back and Dennis Savard up front. I got the old timers on display today. I've got every bobblehead from, you know, when they started making bobbleheads in Chicago. Probably would have been like the 2007-8 era when Kane and Tate showed up.
Yeah.
I got them all. I got Troy Murray and John Weideman, the broadcasters, Glenn Hall, Keith Magnuson, all the current players. It's quite the collection. I'll have to show you it sometime.
So when did that start? Did you just naturally, and then you thought, I gotta get every one of them, or what?
Yeah, I don't know if I have every single one, but the Hawks changed things around, as you know. Like, I don't know what year that was, probably right around when Kane and Tate showed up, maybe right before they showed up, but definitely by their arrival, things started to change. And at the start of the season, there was four or five guys that were going to get their bobbleheads made up and handed out throughout the course of the season. So I hung on to those guys. And then it just seemed like every season there was five, six, seven guys. Next thing you know, I had this huge collection, and my kids like to come in and play with it and change the sticks around and stuff. I think I got about 9 or 10 Kane and Taves, and then, you know, one Brian Bickle, one Andrew Shaw, but that's how it goes.
How many Patrick Sharps?
There's a few. I got a Philadelphia Phantoms Patrick Sharp, which was lucky enough to be made up for me back in the day. And then maybe I got a Stanley Cup one. Oh, my wife and I did I should probably have that one on display. I'll probably get in trouble if I don't. Our wedding cake was a two bobbleheads, me in my full Hawks uniform, and then my wife with her wedding dress on. So that's a good one too.
Have the kids broken any?
Oh yeah, they smash them up all the time, but that's what they're there for. I got them on display so I can try to tell them all the great things that Dad used to do when he played hockey, but they don't care. They just like the bobblehead.
Where are the Stanley Cups?
They're on the mantle. Okay. I should probably, I'm looking at your setup now with all the cool memorabilia behind you. I should probably turn the camera around because the wall behind me is covered with like the president's trophies on there that the Hawks won and all the different team awards that we had. It looks kind of cool, but I don't know. I'll just stick with the old timers for today.
At the end of this, I'm getting you to flip around the camera for sure. So Vegas and Colorado had this great battle for home ice and the President's Trophy. Do you believe in the President's Trophy jinx?
No, because we actually won a cup once upon a time, I think, in 2013 when the Hawks won the President's Trophy. I do believe in expectations and pressure, though. And when you win the President's Trophy, it really doesn't mean much because day one of round one in the playoffs, the light switch goes on, the intensity kicks in, and sometimes it's easier to play as the underdog. But it is something for the team, for the organization, for coaches, management, players. Everybody can kind of hang their hat on it and say, hey, look what we accomplished. But I think both those teams that are fighting for it understand what's really important, and that's winning four rounds in the playoffs.
I don't know whether you can say that there's a true favorite this year. Yeah. Can you?
I can't. I was talking with Keith Jones the other day. We were just looking at the standings, and you could make a case for, what, 2 to 3, maybe all 4 teams in every division. I mean, I look at the West, and we know who the favorites are, but Minnesota, you haven't been impressed with how they've been playing. They could steal a series perhaps against somebody, St. Louis Blues. They're kind of getting it together here down the stretch, but I wouldn't bet against those guys that have won before. I look at what the Hawks did last year in their return to play against the Oilers, 5-12. I don't think too many people thought the Hawks were going to win that series, and they won it basically with Corey Crawford, Duncan Keith, Kane and Taves up front. You know, Brandon Saad was pretty good. Those guys that have been there and done that. So I wouldn't bet St. Louis out. The Eastern Division, I mean, who's going to win that division? I would lean towards Boston right now, but once again, when we get going here, it's up for grabs there. Same with the other two, Carolina, Florida, Tampa. I don't know. How do you pick a winner there? So I don't think there is a favorite this year, and that's what makes it exciting. I think it's awesome that we got to watch, you know, 7 or 8 teams battle it out against each other all season long. We get a pretty good feel of how to rank those teams within the division, but now we're going to truly see who comes out of each division. That'll be fun. And then the unknown, right? We could have a Toronto versus Vegas in the conference final or whatever it's called, the third round of the playoffs.
Third round, yeah.
It'll be fun this year to watch.
Stanley Cup semifinals, going back to my youth. I called it that once on Sportsnet, and the boss came and said, it's not the semifinals. I'm like, what was when I was 12?
So right. It's always changing.
You know, there's no middle square in the bingo card either. Like, we used to have 3 or 4 favorites, and now we don't have that, obviously, as you just eloquently explained. But we don't have that 2 or 3 teams where you just go, that team's got to pass.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's I keep looking at Tampa Bay. And they get my attention only because they won the cup last year. And going back the previous season, that heartbreaking loss in the first round kind of woke them up. And they had to battle last year in the bubble to win those 4 rounds. And they did it. They've got a great team on paper. I believe in all those players. The question for me is Stamkos, Kucherov, can they come back and their timing be good? Can the health be 100%? And then if that's the case, are they going to be able to get to that same battle level for 4 rounds? You know, Florida's not going to go away. Joel's got that team, you know, playing fast, playing hard. They're hungry. And that's kind of what I look at this time of year is which goaltenders are playing the best, which team can just fall back, protect leads, rely on their defensive structure. But more than anything, who's the hungriest team? Who wants to win? Who wants to dig in when it gets really hard every playoff series? Because as a player that's been on a few good teams over the years and won a few playoff rounds, every single playoff series, there was a turning point. There was a time where the team, the line you're on, the group you're playing with kind of looks around and says, it's go time here. We got to really dig in. And that comes down to hunger and who wants it. So we'll see if Tampa can get back to that level. I know Carolina looks hungry. Don't you think they're flying around out there looking like a hungry team ready to win a Stanley Cup? It takes the next level for their organization.
They are fun to watch. And Nashville is talking about like opening up the rink. And that could be, in this era where teams are playing at limited capacity, if you open up the rink, and we haven't experienced that in a year and a half, that could be an factor.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a great point. I don't know how good of a player I would have been the last 2 years. Playing in empty buildings, it doesn't seem like it's – I was a guy that thrived off the energy in the building. I like to look around. My head was in the crowd half the game, feeling the energy of the fans. I loved it when I scored a goal. I'd go crazy and do all these weird celebrations. You got to really commend these players and coaches for battling out these last couple of years. So that's a huge factor. Every team that slowly started to allow fans back into the building, we saw a huge jump in their play that night. It's obvious that it helps. Doesn't necessarily have to be a packed, sold-out building, 22,000 fans screaming, but just having some bodies in there cheering for your team helps you push that group over the edge. So Nashville's a team that could be dangerous. Those Florida teams seem to get a good crowd these days. I know Vegas would be a huge home ice advantage if they can capture what they've had in years past. So that's a huge point looking forward.
7,500 the last 3 games for Vegas at home, and it was life-changing. I know it's not like truly to your soul, but boy, was it, what's the difference? It just felt so good. Kucherov and Stamkos coming back. If you're Florida, if you're in that locker room, are you sour?
Like, No, I think it just raises your level that much more. I think they got to go right after Kucherov and Stamkos. Play them hard. Don't let them set up. Stay out of the penalty box, right? Because when you haven't played the game in a long time and you're Kucherov and Stamkos, what you can do and what you want to do is handle that puck on a power play.
Right.
You know, that doesn't really change necessarily. Get some free touches there. So I would imagine that Joel and his staff are saying, let's not put these guys on the power play. Let's go right into their faces every time they have the puck. Make them beat us. Because if they are healthy and they are having their timing back and they're motivated, they will beat some players out there. They've shown that in the past. But, you know, that's a huge question mark for me and a division, really, that I'll be watching in these first couple rounds big time.
Do you know what Joel's telling his players right now? Can you almost recite it?
Yeah, I probably could. I don't want to give away too much, but it's almost like a list of commandments going into a playoff series that a team, a group, leadership in the room needs to follow for every series. And he kind of goes through it. He did it the first few years with us in Chicago, 2009, when we first made it, 2010. And then as the years went on, he stopped reading off the list. And I'm not sure if the list changed or if he just trusted in his core group of players to know what that was by heart now and abide by it. But it does make a difference. And the coaching experience matters this time of year. Problem for Joel is he looks across the way and he sees John Cooper, who's done pretty well in the playoffs too. But Joel will have those guys ready to play, ready to compete, no doubt about that.
Do you see similarities in Florida or is it a different team?
I see similarities. I see a team in Florida that was talented, had a lot of star power. You know, these guys that we all have heard of that are putting up big numbers, but the team just doesn't have much flair to it. They can't get out of the first round. They have a tough time making the playoffs. All of a sudden, Joel gets in there and things start to get organized. Things start to be on the same page. And you're seeing some guys take huge steps in their games individually. Mackenzie Weegar is a player that comes to mind. Joel's number one priority, it seems, is always finding those stable defense pairs, guys that you can roll out there, trust they're not going to get pinned in their zone. You don't want to get scored on. That's the worst thing that can happen. And losing Aaron Ekblad, I kind of thought that, you know, I don't think the Florida Panthers can withstand that kind of a blow, but Mackenzie Weegar, right-handed shot, has kind of filled that role and then some. He's playing some real good hockey. They got Gus Forsling, who used to be with Joel and Alfie Samuelson back in Chicago, so they're familiar there. And I think they just got confidence in Gus right now. That's a real nice pair. Another similarity would be the Kane and Taves, Barkov, Huberto situation. They'll see each other on the power play, but for the most part this season, those guys have been on separate lines, just like Kane and Taves, where Barkov will be that first line in your face checking line center like Patrice Bergeron, Jonathan Taves, and then you go on the second line if you want to call it that, and you got a elite point producer in Huberto. So there's some similarities there as well. But Joel, it's funny how he builds his teams and how he has respect for every player. Not every player is perfect. There's strengths and weaknesses to everyone's game, but instead of looking at the weaknesses and casting somebody aside, he tries to put everybody in a position of where their strengths can be shown the best, and that's what he's doing right now with that group. So I think Tampa's got a tough first round series this year.
And he's not afraid to use both goaltenders, and he's got two good ones right now. So we may see that. You experienced that firsthand in that great Nashville series on a cup run. What's Joel like if you do get scored on? Coming back to the bench. You mentioned that you don't want to get scored on.
He'll pull out the paper and he'll look down and he'll write something. I'm not sure if he's actually writing something or if he knows the camera's on him in that situation. He wants to look like he's doing something, but he sees everything. He's not just looking at the puck going in the net. He knows why that thing was in there. And take it from a guy that was on the ice for a lot of goals against. I try to stay away from Joel after that happened.
Who has the advantage in Washington and Boston with the whole Chara factor?
Yeah. Don Moore was talking about that last time I saw him. And he brought up a good point how Chara is going to really help the Capitals in that regard. I mean, he's been such a fit in the Bruins locker room, and I know they've had some personnel and some turnover with the roster, but things are pretty cultured there in Boston. And then you hear Taylor Hall talk about it, comes into the team, he looks around, wow, these guys know how to win, they do things a certain way. As far as adjustments in a game, Char has been there and done that, and it can help you in a November game on a Tuesday night. But I think it really gives you an advantage in a seven game series when making those adjustments as the series goes on is so important. Char is going to kind of, he's going to know what his team's doing. He's going to kind of be on the inside of Boston as well and see those moves coming ahead of time. But at the end of the day, it's the players are going to settle this on the ice. And Char's had a pretty good season from where I've watched the games. He's made up a nice defense pair there for Washington. And his big, like, menacing look kind of fits the mold of that Washington team that's big and heavy and plays their best when they're in the face of their opponent. But that series to me is all about Ovi, really. I mean, is he going to be able to skate as fast as he can, perform like we've seen him perform in recent playoff series? If he is, Washington's got a good chance. If not, that changes the series big time.
And Char's not going to hold anything back. I know he's a Bruin within his heart, but boy, he's not going to just go, I'm going to go with kid gloves here.
Yeah, I think he's ready to go. And I don't know how that would feel. I played for Dallas 1 year. And we had Minnesota in the first round. Dallas had a great year. And we beat Minnesota in the first round. We're waiting to see who we're going to play in the second round. It was the Chicago-St. Louis series. St. Louis ends up winning in that awesome Game 7 with Troy Brouwer scoring the game-winning goal. But what happened on that play? There was a point shot from Siebes in the dying seconds of Game 7. And it, like, got deflected off the post, went across the goal line, out the other post. It was just hard to kill the Hawks back then.
Yeah.
And I remember watching in Dallas with my wife thinking, like, I don't want my buddies to lose here, but I definitely don't want to play the Hawks in the second round. That would be weird for me as a player. And I feel like Char is the same way in the regard that we're at our best when we got that intensity going and you can't have friends out there on the ice. I don't think that when the game's being played, that they know Char's got too many friends on either side. But having said that, I anticipate Char just being a beast in this series, proving a point to the Bruins that he can still get it done. I'm just glad I didn't have to deal with that in my career.
Is it true? Like there is no friends out there, or is that overstated?
Well, that's what they say, but I don't know. I mean, if I was going in on the corner and I had a chance to really pop Siege or dunk on the forecheck or get Yarmolson with his head down, I mean, I want to help my team win, but I don't know, man. Chara was in Boston for a long time. Can you really see him getting into it with Marchand and Bergeron and Pasternak? No. I mean, I'm sure he will. He'll compete as hard as he can, but I don't know if there's going to be much hate behind it. Let's leave it at that.
I wouldn't want to be the other guys that he would take it out on. Like, I won't drill you, but you are totally right on board. Exactly. What about the North? Both Boston, Toronto and Edmonton have some significant pressure on them. Like, they were the teams you mentioned, Chicago last year. They bounced Edmonton, and Toronto lost to Columbus in their series. Great seasons, but pressure here.
Yeah, pressure on Toronto for sure, because everything I hear out of the North Division, whether I believe it or not, is that it's a weak division and Toronto's the best team and just put them in the Final Four. I mean, that's a lot of pressure to be dealing with from a fan base. There's internal expectations in Toronto. They've got a team that feels like they can win playoff rounds and expect to. So there is a lot of heat there. But what else is new for those Maple Leafs players? It seems like they're under the microscope for whatever they do. I just know that when the playoffs start, as poorly as Winnipeg has played down the stretch, as uncomfortable as Montreal has made it seem, once that series starts, you never know what's going to happen. Montreal surprised a lot of people beating Pittsburgh last year. Why can't they do that again? I'm assuming everybody's healthy and ready to go for day one of playoffs, of course. And the goaltender situation in Toronto is a bit of an interesting one for me. I like Jack Campbell, had a chance to play with him. He's an awesome teammate. Is he going to be ready to be a starting goaltender in a playoff series? Freddie Anderson, I mean, always playing and working his way back, but hasn't exactly had a ton of game time at that position. I remember Ben Bishop jumping into the playoffs in the middle of a lengthy absence, and he didn't have his timing down, right? And I know he was banged up as well. So it's a lot to ask just to assume that everybody's going to be on an even playing field. Right now, I wouldn't want to face the Oilers. I mean, McDavid's getting a point per period, and everybody knows he's getting the puck, and nobody can do anything about it. Say what you want about the depth of that team, but I wouldn't want to face those guys on the power play in a playoff series. That would be a difficult matchup as well. So why couldn't Edmonton come out of there? But expectations and pressure are a real thing. It's about who manages it the best, I suppose.
Montreal or Winnipeg, who do you think could pull off an upset?
Yeah, I like Winnipeg. I'm trying to figure out what's going on there.
Yeah.
They got a good goaltender in Hellebuck. I think Nick Ehlers being out down the stretch there for a couple games made a difference. I thought he was having a great season with his speed. He's got a little bit of a bite to his game. Early in his career, yeah. He felt like people would take advantage of him for being a skilled offensive type player. And then all of a sudden he started to give it back a little bit and his game went to another level. I like their strength down the middle. I'm a big fan of Mark Scheifele. Dubois showed me enough in a playoff series last year against Austin Matthews that he can go head to head and raise his level in battle. And Lowry's probably the guy that is really valuable in a playoff series. He'll take on somebody in a top checking role. So I think Winnipeg, to answer your question, would be the team that has a better chance of having an upset in the first round.
Do you have a team that you think will get to the Final Four out of the four divisions? I'm not going to ask you to go right on through, but one of those clubs where you go, geez, of everybody that's going here, they should be there.
Yeah, but the problem is I have that with a couple teams in every division. And so it's tough to really nail it down and pick one. I would probably lean toward Vegas. I felt strongly about that team ever since they came into the league. But this year and last season specifically, they just have a big team. They've got two starting goaltenders. It's tough to get to the net. It's tough to score against that team. In a playoffs round, they're going to be even more physical. They're going to be in your face. And the only thing that really hurt them last year, I felt, was getting some big time goals at the right moments. Yeah. They were looking for playoff goals, and Stone, Pacioretty, Marchessault, Smith, William Karlsson can score goals. There's goals in the lineup. Alex Tuck's a guy that I think could have a monster playoffs. I know he gets used all over the lineup, but every time I watch a game, he seems to be on that third line for Vegas. Those are some good matchups in the playoff series. I remember one year I was centering Marian Hossa, and the way our team was built, it was like Dave Bolin was the checking center going against scorers. Kane and Taves were on the line. And then I was centering Marian Hossa, and we were like the forgotten line. And I remember playing against some of these third pair defensemen thinking like, there's no way they're going to contain Marian Hossa for seven games. And that's kind of how I feel with Tuck. Like, he's going to get some good matchups there. All the attention is going to be on the top six, and he could really, you know, score 10 or 15 goals in a playoff run. So Vegas would be the answer to the question. I feel strongly about them getting out and being in the Final Four. But, I mean, you heard what I said earlier about Minnesota, St. Louis, and then Colorado could be a favorite to win the Cup. So that's what makes this year fun, is there's really no favorites.
The Islanders are a four seed. How's that?
There you go. And they're a team that, based on the game that I just watched yesterday, it reminded me of how they play in the playoffs. They could be in their D zone for 25 minutes straight, give up all kinds of shots, and then there's one turnover in the neutral zone and it's in the back of the net and the score is 1-0 or 1-1 at that point. So they'll hang around. They're so well coached and they play strong defensively. They're in that structure all the time. They could be a team that'd be a pain in the butt to match up with as well.
Who is your team that you want to watch in the Stanley Cup playoffs when the game, we love the first round, but is there a team Patrick Sharp goes, and Vegas you mentioned, but
yeah, I found myself watching Carolina more and more.
Really?
Nice. I feel like I like Aho, the way that he plays up front. He's not a one-dimensional player. He's always looking to involve his line mates. I always enjoyed watching Teravainen play. He's got a really creative offensive mind, and when he's healthy and playing well, he makes plays that aren't just your typical offensive plays. Svechnikov is one of my favorite forwards in the league. Again, very similar to Aho in the sense that he's not one-dimensional. I know we always show him scoring goals, driving the puck hard to the net, but he's a big physical presence out there up front. And I just kind of like the way Carolina plays. All four lines, it's tough to really go through the lines and say, oh, this is the job of this line, this is the job of that line. They're all the same. They go straight lines. They finish checks. Their intensity is through the roof. I'm guessing that comes from their head coach. And they're getting better every year. So they'd be a team that if they get past Florida and Tampa and Nashville, all those teams in that central, then they would have my eye on them for sure coming out of it all, really.
They're a team that can hurt you as the series goes on, right?
Yeah, I think they're not going to slow down as the series goes on. And a couple of playoff rounds that they have had in recent years, they've had to really use their depth. And we're putting guys into the lineup that we got to look up, who is this guy? How do you say his name? Where's he from? And next thing you know, he's making an impact in that series. So yeah, Carolina's got a pretty good team.
Yeah, I'm so happy that one of my proudest moments of this season has been trying to figure out how to say Nedeljkovic. And about halfway through, I did. And then halfway through, about three quarters of the way through, I could say it while looking at it. So there was big progress on that front. What do you do during the Stanley Cup playoffs? Every night, or what's your schedule?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think it'll be every night. We've got Anson Carter will be in. Yeah. Dominic Moore will be doing some games. Jonesy will be around. So we've got a few different faces that you'll see. It might be a situation of one-on, one-off, two-on, one-off. I'm not sure. It gets pretty busy in those first two rounds when there's games all day, every day, it seems. Mm-hmm. I go down to Stamford, Connecticut, get in the hotel. It's like I'm going on a road trip from the family. I got to go on a hockey trip here. I'll see you in a couple of weeks, just delve into the playoffs. And then as we get going into the third round, things kind of slow down. But yeah, it's playoff hockey all over again. I'm gearing up, and just like I did when I was a player.
They're going to relax the protocols if teams are vaccinated to a certain extent. Do you worry about some teams maybe getting out of their routine? They've been in this strict situation for a while now.
Yeah, I think it could only help. But routine does matter. And going back to my playoff experience, we had a great setup with the Hawks. We would, on the road, we would get this lounge room rented out, and we'd have all kinds of big screen TVs. We'd have like video game stations set up. We'd have all the other games being played. And there's just kind of a hangout room for the players, the trainers, to come and go. And just, we're always talking hockey. We're competing. We're having fun. We're rehabbing injuries, whatever's going on. We're together as a team. And I grabbed my oldest daughter's Nintendo the other day, and I started playing Mario Kart because I don't know why. We've had it forever. I haven't played in years. But during the playoffs, all I would do was play Mario Kart. Literally every hour of the day on the road was go to practice, go back to the lounge, and play Mario Kart. So I don't know if it's this time of year that gets me in the mode where I just focus on video games and then hockey, but I found myself falling into that same routine right now.
Are you any good?
I'm really good at Mario Kart. I got to pump my own tires there. No. Nicholas Yarmolson is the best I've ever seen. The guy, he's like, he should be a competitive Mario Kart player. He knows the tracks off like the back of his hand. He's got all the shortcuts and he stays relaxed. The thing about Mario Kart is you got to stay chill out during the each race, because chaos happens if you can kind of get out in the battle. But Hammer's always out in front and wins all the races usually.
Which character are you?
I'm Donkey Kong. That's my guy. It's funny because when I think of all my old teammates too, like Siebes was Bowser and Buff was Yoshi. Kaner was King Boo. Like everybody had their own character, you know, and everybody would fight to get Bowser all the time, and Siebes would come in and claim him as his character. So I used to be Bowser, but I switched over to another big guy, Donkey Kong. It likes to be bouncing people off you in those races.
Hey, before I let you go, just we've talked a few times on the Chirp about Patrick and what he did this year. And for a while there, I thought he was going to give it a run. And then Connor just took off. It wasn't like Kaner slowed down at all, but that was pretty incredible what Patrick did.
Yep, it was. And I wasn't even really impressed with the offensive side of things for Kaner. I've seen that for years, and we're probably going to see it for a bunch more years. He's going to get his points. He'll be well over a point a game when it's all said and done. But what I was impressed with him this year was we all expected the Hawks to be brutal. And the first four games of the year, they were brutal. It was like they couldn't get out of their zone. There was no organization. Pucks were going in from everywhere. And it looked like it was going to be like first overall pick time. And Kaner came out and made a statement to the media right around that time about how, you know, it's a developing year, but we need to compete for a playoff spot. And with this group, we should battle hard. And there's no reason why we can't be in the top four. And the team went on this like 20 to 25 game run where they were competitive every single night. And I saw Kaner doing things at this point in his career that he hasn't done a whole lot of in the early years of his career. He's using his voice a lot more. He understands that these players on his team grew up watching him be a superstar in the league. And now they're sitting beside him in the room. So that's where I've been more impressed with Kaner, is he's being more vocal with his leadership qualities. I think even when we were winning Stanley Cups and he was the 21-year-old kid, he still had those qualities. He still admired him for how hard he worked and took the game seriously. But now he's using his voice a little bit more. And that was what I was most impressed with. It's disappointing the Hawks didn't make it a little bit closer at the end to get into the playoffs, because if they did, then listen, I know where my vote's going for MVP this year. It's going to McDavid for that incredible season that he's had. But Kaner would have got a lot more recognition had the Hawks got into the playoffs and the big role that he played on that team.
Do you like having a vote for awards?
I did it last year for the first time, and I enjoyed it. I liked going through it all, and I liked the process of it. I thought I put a lot of thought into my picks, and then I could do without the abuse from the fans that disagreed with me on a few things. I just didn't have the energy to get involved in those arguments, but I enjoyed the actual process because I think those awards are important, and it's very tough to give those awards to somebody when you just watch the games, you know? I mean, yeah. We could go through that argument a million times. Like, you could talk about a player like Victor Hedman, for example, just off the top of my head. His numbers are what they are, but like the players on the ice, the coaches behind the bench, they know that he's a top defenseman, if not the best in the league in any situation. So it's like, how do you judge the award? Do you do it for numbers? Do you do it for value to the team? So I found that to be a little bit confusing, and it took a little more time and thought than I would have liked, but I enjoyed it, and we'll see if I do it again in the future.
Who would spend more time on their selections, you or Jonesy?
We're pretty similar,
yeah.
Actually, is what I'm finding in retirement. Jonesy's been like a best friend to me. I sit and watch hockey with him a couple nights a week, and when the game's on, we're watching it, and we're thinking similar thoughts, but we're talking about it's like a therapy session for me. It's like life after hockey for Patrick. And I pick his brain on what he did and how life evolves. He's got one daughter. I've got two of my own. It's really been awesome hanging with him. And I find that the more I hang with him, the more we think alike. And we think hockey the same way. We would like to build our teams the same way. And he's been a huge help for me in the last 3 years in everything, not just hockey broadcasting, but just kind of come to terms with the fact that hockey's over for me.
He's a funny dude, right?
He's hilarious. Hilarious. He's got some good one-liners on the show, but he keeps it pretty professional on TV. But off camera, he's got me laughing all night long.
Do you want to keep doing this? I know you've done some booth work and that analyst work when Edzo's been on assignment. Do you have a preference?
Yeah, it was fun. I got a chance to do some color commentary with the Hawks, and I felt fun doing that with Pat Foley. Because Pat's a friend of mine, the Blackhawks to me, I still know guys on the team, the organization's changed a little bit, but there's a lot of familiar faces there. So I felt comfortable doing it. And I was a little bit of a homer as a broadcaster, but I think that's okay at the local networks. I enjoy the opportunity NBC gave me to do some studio work, but you know, I don't know what I'm going to do next year, to be quite honest with you. I know I got the two daughters that are big softball players now. They're finally on a team. They're age 7 and they're age 9. So I've got a lot of coaching softball to do next year. I'm just kind of open, and we'll see what comes our way.
What kind of coach are you? Like hard coach or a fun coach?
I try to be fun, but I'm afraid I'm more of like a disciplinarian type thing. I know how hard it is to be good at a sport. You got to really dedicate yourself to it. And I got to remind myself, Patrick, your kids are 7 years old and 9. They're hitting off the tee. They're learning what baseball is. They don't even know where first base is. Sometimes they run the other way, take it down a notch here. They're not going to the major leagues, but that's just the kind of the player I was. And I guess the kind of dad I am now too.
Do you watch baseball with them? Like if the I don't know, Blue Jays or Yankees or anybody are on, do you watch games with them and try and explain?
Always. Yeah. And I'm always like, I'll grab like a stuffed animal or a tennis ball or whatever's lying around, and I'll try to teach them proper throwing form in the middle of the day, and they just look at me like they could care less. So it's fun though. Softball is great for the girls. It teaches them so much. I don't even care about the actual game itself. It's the feelings that my daughters get when they have to go to the plate, and that anxiety and that nervousness comes in, and then how happy they get after they're at bat, whatever, if they get a hit or a strikeout, they come back feeling great about themselves, and they all cheer for each other. It's a great place for little girls to be playing sports.
Hey, one of the coolest things that ever happened to me was after you won your second cup, I met your dad on the ice. And he'd lived in Brandon for a while, and we had this. He came up to me, grabbed me. Where do you live in Brandon? Like, I got to tell you, that was one cool thing. How's everybody there?
They're good. They moved out to Calgary. We lived in Thunder Bay for so many years. My brother lives in Calgary with his daughters, and my parents just got a place out there, so they moved to Alberta. But that's not a surprise that my dad found you on the ice. He watched your show Monday to Friday. Lunch hour, Hockey Central at noon. He was a huge fan of the three of you guys. And that was the second cup, I suppose. You should have seen him by the third one, Darren. He was acting like he won the cup. He was walking around the United Center. He had done this a few times before. He had it all figured out. So those are great moments. I'm glad you brought that up. But on the ice, it's kind of chaos after. As you know, you've been on the ice a few times for those. And it's all about the friends and family, and it's a cool scene. So I'm glad you brought that up.
I remember Kipper grabbing me because we had to do somebody and the interview with somebody, and I was talking to your dad, and we were talking about like Percy Street Rideau, like different things, and I didn't want to be anywhere but with your dad. It's so cool, and Kipper's like, "Get over here! Show me the ball. Like, can you spin the laptop? Is it a laptop or what?"
Let me just grab this iPad and unplug it here.
Oh yeah. See, this is what we call live and interactive at Patrick Sharp's house.
How do I turn this thing? Oh, here we go. Ready?
There.
All right, here we go.
Now that.
So kind of in close. So up here we got the Stars stuff, right? And then we got some Corey Crawford. There's one cup tucked away in there. There's the other one as we pull out. I mean, I know it's not the best view, but
that is pretty cool.
Zoom in on these guys here. This is my collection of bobbleheads. Got the three sharps. Then all these dudes down here, like there's Yarmolson blocking a shot. I love it. And then all down here is all the Kane and Taves dudes, you know, chilling. We got Taser with the cup right there. That's the first one, I think. Here's the old school Philadelphia Phantoms dude.
That's sharp a good one. Look at the duster on you.
Oh, I know. I think it's purple lips more than anything, but they got the hair. They got the hair right on that one. And then over here, here's the wife picture there. See, that's the bobblehead and Abby with the wedding dress on. Got the cup beside it. What else do we got? We got some of the old timers down here, Bobby and Chelios. And then all the other guys. You got Bickle, who else? Hossa, Andrew Shaw, Brandon Sods right there in the corner hiding. This thing's pretty sweet. I'll show you this before we go. This is a hat. Brent Seabrook, he loves making hats and stuff. And let me just sit back down.
Look at that.
There we go. Sorry. Seeps is like, he's big into like designing hats. That's one thing he did as a player. So he made this thing. It's not really to be worn, but it's got the three cups on the side. And then it's signed by the seven players that won the three Stanley Cups. So you got Dunks, Seeps, Hossa, Yarmolson, Kane, Taves, and me, and there's that thing. All seven of us got one of these. That's just the type of guy Siebes is, to kind of put that together and make sure everybody's got one of those. I thought that was pretty cool.
That is awesome. What a tour. And before we let you go, can you pass along our best to John and just send him all our love and all our support, and we can't wait to see him back on the ice and just all the good vibes that we can send to you.
Of course, I'll do that for sure. I can't wait to see him back also.
Thanks for doing this, pal. You're such a cool dude. You always have been. And we wanted to do this playoff preview. And I told Bob Bender, who's our producer, said there's nobody better than Sharp, because he's got that. Do you remember the promo we did at Sportsnet where Jamie Foxx got makeup?
Right. Wasn't it someone called me pretty boy or something?
Yeah. They did all the makeup on Damian Cox, and then they didn't do anything on you. And that was perfect, because it wasn't necessarily about you. It was just a great shot at Damian, who's a good buddy of mine. But thanks for doing this, pal. I could go on forever, but we'll fly and we'll touch base throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs. Have a great run.
All right, Darren. Nice talking to you, buddy.
Dude is just a total natural at everything. I'm not going to tell him, wait till after the interview, like right now, where I say he kind of bugs me a little bit, because he's just so good at everything. Hockey, three Stanley Cups, broadcaster, NBC, SN, doing those national games. He's a cool dad. He collects bobbleheads, maybe a little hardcore on the softball, but that's his only, it's like his worst day is my best day with Patrick Sharp. But Renee Paquette, by the way, has kind of a similar thing going on right now. Author, broadcaster, podcaster, with the Oral Sessions podcast. She's a superstar from her WWE days, but has ambitions for opportunities in our sport, as in something along the lines of the rights just changed and went to Turner. Maybe she can do something there. Her husband is a professional wrestler, John Moxley, and he makes a little cameo in this interview. But Renee is a Canadian. She lives in Las Vegas, so we have that in common. And we kind of bond over that and then explore hockey and wrestling and that mix and a whole bunch of other. It's a stew, or should I say a chili. Here's Renee Paquette on The Chirp. So this is kind of uncomfortable for me. So we come off Patrick Sharp, Renee, and then you. So it's the all beautiful show right now between you and Sharpie.
Patrick Sharp is a beautiful man. Let's just get that out there. What a handsome man he is.
I was joking with him because we did a promo way back when at Sportsnet, and Damien, and I've already told this story on the pod, but Damien was getting makeup, and then the makeup artist turned to do Patrick Sharp, and they just walked away.
Yeah, they're like, "You're good.
We're not touching that. You don't need anything. That canvas.
No, you can have maybe a little powder, maybe a little lip balm. He doesn't need anything beyond that. He's good to go.
Just to justify the job. Yeah. So you're over in Henderson. I'm in Summerlin. This is the first time I've done something with somebody else in Vegas, and we're two Canadians like hanging out.
How crazy is that, yeah. Right? I mean, we kind of could have done this in person. Maybe, you know, somewhere down the line we'd be able to do that. But I know we're like two Canadians here, just what, 20 minutes away, and we still have to do it on Zoom.
What do you like about living in Vegas?
Well, there's a few things. I have a great gym that I go to, which is not that exciting for other people. The heat absolutely kills me. I can't adjust to it. Have you been able to adjust to the heat here?
I like it. I do. Yeah, I do.
God, I wish I was like that. I wish I was. I tried to embrace it year after year. I'm like, I think I can handle this. Like right now I can handle it. In a few weeks, I will not be able to handle it.
The first time that my kids came home so they went home last summer and missed most of the heat, came back for school. And first day, my daughter burned her feet on the back deck because they had no idea. I'm like, you got to be aware, kids. It's like wearing snow. You wear shoes outside.
No, it's the same thing. And you have to, like, instead of starting your car in a Canadian winter, you have to start your car for a Vegas summer to let it cool down in time. But my dogs are the same way, where especially my bulldog, he's pretty clever. My Chihuahua, not so much. But he knows to only walk in the shaded areas because he's burnt his paws before. He used to come check the mail with me, and now he won't because he just knows that it's too hot. It's crazy.
When did you move here, or why did you move here? John from here or what?
No. So John was living here. I was living in New York when I first moved to the United States. Yeah. I lived there for about three, four years, something like that. And then when John and I were dating, it just made sense. For once I didn't have to be in New York and be close to Stamford, Connecticut, where I was doing studio shows for WWE. It made more sense to move out here. It's much cheaper living than being in New York. Shocker. Yeah. I know. But yeah, it just made sense to kind of stay out here. And then we ended up buying a house, and now it's also a great airport to fly in and out of with the amount of travel that we have to do for work. I mean, it's the best. It really is. It's such a great airport. You get so many direct flights. The good thing when you've got like family and friends coming in too is like Vegas flights are pretty cheap.
Yeah.
People are coming here to party. They keep those prices down.
Do you still marvel that you live in Las Vegas?
A little bit. Yeah. It's really funny to me that like as much as we live here and we get to enjoy it, I don't think that we enjoy it to the full capacity that we could just yet. And I sort of blame that on our scheduling, mostly my husband's now, because he's still on the road traveling back and forth to Florida, and he's wrestling, and sometimes he's making trips to Japan. So our schedule isn't always as open. But what I love about being here is how many amazing places you can get within like a 4-hour drive. You know, if you want to get out to California, you want to go to LA or San Diego, you want to go to Arizona, if you want to get up to Utah and go to Zion.
Oh, hold on, Renee, you're living in Las Vegas and you're talking about going everywhere else. What about enjoying this? You're talking about all these other places. I want to know about Vegas. Like, give me the inside scoop on Vegas, where I go, what my wife and I can do. You've been here longer than me, and you're giving me mountains in Utah. I don't need mountains.
I know. So listen, I wish that I had more of a scoop on what the things are to do in Vegas. I feel like My husband and I are such homebodies that a lot of times we're just hanging in our own backyards. However, last night we had a run-in with two gigantic coyotes.
Get out.
Oh my God. We had our dogs. So our house backs onto a golf course and we're out there with our dogs. And my husband's like, what are those? Two massive coyotes like encroaching on where we were hanging with our dogs. It was horrifying.
So what do you do?
Well, my husband made a lot of really big, loud noises. They kind of ran away and I had both the dogs by like the scruff of their necks. I'm like, oh my God, don't go anywhere. So that was a little bit terrifying. Then we just brought them back in the house. You keep hearing about some of the wildlife out here, but that was my first encounter with any of them.
Could we had the mountain lion last year in our area.
Because they had them in Summerlin. I know it's so crazy. These things that we're not used to in Canada. No. We just have raccoons everywhere.
Trash pandas. Those things are, they're brilliant. Like they will take over civilization. They can pick a combination locks. They're awesome. My apartment in Toronto, they'd be like, just looking at me going, hey, what's up? When you see coyotes or something like that, it's like full reign to be the biggest idiot that you can. You can do whatever you want. And it's like, I'm just scaring a coyote. I can be a total goofball.
You have to. Yeah. You got to do something. You got to act quick. You got to be on the ball because they were like getting close to, like they were just like prancing up. And I always thought coyotes were like the size of a fox. These guys were huge. So yeah, that was a little bit scary. But I mean, other than that, I mean, we're like, especially during the pandemic, it's like, God, we've not really done all that much of anything. We like to go down to Fremont Street sometimes. Like if we're going to go out in Vegas, we do Fremont. We like to kind of slum it a little bit. We don't want to be in like the super fancy pants. And walking through a casino is a nightmare for me, to be completely honest.
Why?
Because following the signs, if I'm like, oh, I want to go check out this restaurant or whatever, you follow the sign, you follow the sign, you follow the sign, then all of a sudden the sign's gone and you've walked like a full lap around the casino. You can't find the place. So that can make me a little bit bonkers.
I have sadly done that several times.
I know, we all have.
Yeah, now that I figure, and then you get back to the same sign, you're like, what the hell is going on? How did I miss that?
No, it's like the labyrinth. You expect David Bowie to pop up at some point and he's going to like guide you in some other direction or put you in the oubliette. It's horrible. But yeah, and you know, not to be like a total dork because we're doing a hockey podcast here, but the fact that we have a hockey team here pumps me up. And the fact that now we've got the AHL team here, I've not been able to make it out to any of the Silver Knights games. I've not been there yet, but they're building the new arena just around the corner from us. So the fact that I'm going to be able to go there, take my brand new daughter, introduce her to hockey and get like some giant beers and have a time and be able to walk home, like that is living to me. I'm so pumped for that.
You Golden Knights fan?
Yeah, of course.
So what do you think? What's going to happen here? Not necessarily for the last week of the season, but the Stanley Cup run, because it's pretty set up.
It's pretty set up. I mean, I was a little bit upset that they did not get to clinch the West last night. Mm-hmm. I thought that was going to happen. I was so looking forward to it. And I only caught the third period because I was dealing with the Coyote situation last night. so I only caught the tail end of it. But yeah, as soon as I saw Colorado jump up, I was like, oh my God, no, this could have been amazing. I mean, you can't help but just kind of marvel at what the team's been able to do over the past 4 years of everything that they've been able to accomplish. So, I mean, that would have been what, like, three division titles in the past 4 years, something like that. So just to be able to see what they've been able to do has been fantastic. But yeah, I mean, looking forward to the Stanley Cup in this condensed season. It's a fun time to be a fan. It's like an interesting time to be a fan, but to just be able to like sit back and watch so much hockey in such a small amount of time and sort of see where everyone's going to land. I mean, obviously I'm here rooting for my Golden Knights, but we'll see what kind of happens.
Okay, how do you split the vibe between Toronto and Vegas though? Because you've got two teams here.
So it is tough. I know. And as I'm like looking at like the standings and kind of seeing where everything goes, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, so I have to be completely honest that I did jump off the Toronto bandwagon a couple years ago. I know it's bad, but I'm in Vegas. I needed something to sink my teeth into. I needed to make something feel like home. So having a hockey team here certainly helped with that. And now to see that Toronto's like kicking ass, that never happened when I lived in Toronto.
Renee, it never happened when a lot of people lived in Toronto. and then so, died in Toronto, like lived, died, and it never happened.
It's so sad. And, you know, so actually for a period, I was waitressing during Toronto Maple Leafs games. So I used to work at the Air Canada Center and I would waitress during Leafs games, always in Walter Gretzky's section when I could pull that one off. He was always such a pleasure to see when he would make his way down to the arena. I loved being able to see Walter, literally everyone's favorite hockey dad. But yeah,
where I met my wife was the press box.
At, really?
Canada Center. Yeah.
You know, when I used to work there, it's where I met James Cebulski, and he was a real treat. And he really helped me kind of figure out how to get into sports broadcasting. Cause I would see him doing his standups. And I'm like, I would always kind of linger around to like, see what was going on and how people were like managing all that. So he was really cool. And he would always, you know, spend extra time and talk to me and sort of show me how those ropes worked. But yeah, anyways, I used to work during those games. So being able to work during Raptors games and Toronto Maple Leafs games and be a fan from that point of view, while also collecting a little bit of cash, wasn't a bad way to make a living at the time. But yeah, I mean, we've not been able to, you know, really root for Toronto in a long time. And now here we are.
Okay, so Toronto, Vegas meet in the third round or the Stanley Cup final. What are you going to do? Do you have sweaters? Do you have sweaters?
I was just going to say, I think I might have to stitch them together, like cut them down the middle.
No, you can't do that. Those people drive me crazy at the rink.
No, you know what? Those are super dorky. Yeah. Also, so I don't have a Leafs jersey here, but I do have a Golden Knights jersey. And okay. I did the dorky thing of putting my own name on the back, and it wasn't, to be fair, it wasn't really me. My husband was down there and he was getting the shirts, so they put Young on the back. It's an embarrassing moment for me.
Okay. So I don't know what names that you guys go by.
I know,
between the two of you, like there's nine names.
Honestly, sometimes I don't know. I keep trying to fill out my tax information and I'm like, what is this under? I'm not really sure. So, I mean, between me, professionally, I go by Paquette. Legally, I go by Good. And then when I was on TV for WWE, it was Young. So it was
ever
like,
screw it up doing a broadcast and say the wrong last name?
Shockingly, I never did.
Really?
I don't know how that happened. Because saying Young was obviously the very foreign one to me. Because I was like, that's not my name. That's weird. And I kept kind of stumbling over it. But the first time I went back to using Paquette, I did say Young once because I was so used at that point to saying that on TV. So I guess I did do that, but it wasn't live. So it only half counts.
I'm going to get back to hockey in a second. But one thing I was wondering about, did they make you change your name?
Yes. Yeah, that happened really early on. I mean, I was still living in Toronto when I got the email and they're like, your new name. And it was Renee Sterling, which I hated. So they let me kind of send over some other options to them. So I sent them Rogers, which is Prince's real last name, Rustin, which is Audrey Hepburn's real last name. And then I gave them Young from Neil Young. And then they went Neil Young.
Boy, you put some real work into that.
I did. Well, if you have to pick a new stage name, there has to be some kind of thought and effort put behind it, right?
Don't talk to me. I'm the laziest person on the planet. Like Smith work?
Yeah, right. Honestly. Well, I mean, Young and Smith are kind of in the same vein, to be honest.
And they made you go to classes to get rid of the accent?
Yes. Yeah. Do you ever do you get caught up in that of people calling you out for Canadian accent?
Renee, the first season, I got pounded with criticisms about different
crazy
things, that offense. And I had to change how I talked about the game because I couldn't use certain words because I couldn't pronounce them right. And if I did go down that path, I would just get hammered on it.
What were some of the words?
Offensive, like the offensive attack.
Instead of
offensive or.
Oh, because I would say offensive as well.
Yeah.
You're supposed to say offensive.
I guess so, but
like that sounds like you've been offended.
Defense, offensive defense.
That sounds different.
Yeah, it was brutal. what I would go through, process.
Yes. That one's a weird one. Yeah.
I get hammered on that because in hockey, everything's a process. We got to stick to the process. Yeah. And I would say process, and Shane Natty would send me a note like, stop being Canadian. Stop being,
it's tough. It's hard to shake those out. I still keep all the extra U's in my words. My phone hates it, but I keep them in there. It's hard making that adjustment, but I will say, I mean, I never thought that I had like a super thick Canadian accent. It's not like I was like from the Maritimes or anything like that. So I was like, didn't think it was a big deal. And honestly, I don't even think that you know, whoever it was at WWE that had decided that I needed to take these classes. I honestly don't even think they heard me talk. I think they had just assumed she's from Canada. Let's get her this like non-regional dialect, like Ron Burgundy. And yeah, they sent me to these classes, which I did for about 8 weeks. And it was a trip because, I mean, I'd come home with these worksheets and it's really just like pronouncing vowels. Yeah, you'd have like just pronouncing vowels differently. And every now and then I'll catch myself and be like, oh, I can't even talk in my Canadian accent anymore because I think it'll like rewire me entirely. I don't think I can do it.
Do you have any of those worksheets left that I could borrow?
I don't. No. I burned those before I moved out to Las Vegas.
Who's your favorite player?
I mean, I've got to stick with my dude Fleury. I love watching Fleury. I love watching him and Nett. I love watching him be the master of his domain. I'm a huge guy or a huge Fleury guy.
Mark Stone seems to me to be, from your wrestling background,
yes,
like that expressiveness. Like could he do an entrance if we were 100%. Doing wrestling?
100%. That's actually one of my favorite things going down to games is when they, cause, one of our guys that used to work with WWE, he was on their home team at T-Mobile and he would always play a WWE entrance theme. So whether somebody got in a fight or during goals or whatever. So it was always like cool to see like that WWE connection, but yeah, I think Mark Stone could absolutely thrive in the wrestling world. I would love to see him step out there. I feel like he could like cut a great promo.
Yes.
You know, it's really just about the personality at that point. We know the guy's obviously a great athlete. So just add a little razzle dazzle. I have I've got denim jackets, got leather jackets. I've got sequin jackets because you've got to have the whole gear ready as well. So I could help him out. We could really come up with a great WWE character together.
Who would be Mark Stone's tag team partner?
Oh gosh.
Do you hate wrestling questions?
No, I don't at all. Okay. No, not at all. I mean, maybe we could throw Pacioretty out there. Maybe throw him out there. Maybe some Ryan Reeves.
Ryan Reeves would be good. Pacioretty's big boy too.
Yeah.
Jonathan Marchessault.
Carlson, because he's got the hair.
Yes.
He's got that wrestling hair down already. So throw Carlson out there maybe. Because Carlson's kind of got that like pretty boy, the hairdo, but also, you know, he's a big beefy guy as well. So I think Carlson might be able to thrive in that world as well.
The TNT tweet that you put out the other day.
Yes.
Got some love.
It did. Yeah. How cool. I mean, what a cool gig that would be, right? I mean, just as you're watching, you know, where the NHL rights were going to go and what's going to happen, is it, you know, with NBC and ESPN and now to TNT. So once I saw the TNT connection, I was like, oh, interesting. Cause I know a guy that works at TNT. My husband, obviously, with him wrestling over there. So I was like, wait, so there's like an AEW wrestling connection. Now hockey is over there and I'm a free agent.
So have you talked to Tara?
I have not yet, but I know my agent has been in contact with them. So we'll see. I miss being able to talk hockey. I've been so submerged in the world of wrestling that when I kind of come up for air and I'm like, hey, wait, what's going on? What's happening? But hockey is one of those things that's just will always kind of be second nature to me. It's in our blood. It's what we do. It's what we know. It's what we love. So to be able to dabble in that world, I would love to do that. I think it would be so much fun.
So I grew up cutting my teeth on panels, but very different panels. We had you talk here. Now the radio show was much more casual. Who would be, and TNT's got a more that style. Free flowing, who would be on your TNT panel?
So my TNT panel, now that we know that ESPN has not secured Gretzky, I think you need Gretzky on a panel.
You got to call him Gretz though.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Gretz.
Hey, Gretz.
Have him on because I would just like to have a relationship with Gretz. You know, I want to be able to like shoot the shit with him. I want us to like be able to talk a little hockey. Maybe throw back a cocktail. I would like to be friends with him. Who doesn't, obviously?
Yeah.
So I would like to see him in that spot. I would have to throw my dude CM Punk out there because he has that wrestling connection with me already. We've already hosted a show together, so we already have that rapport. He is a massive hockey fan, specifically a homer, obviously, for the Blackhawks. And I'm going to add in the Spittin' Chiclets boys. I think having Bissonnette and Ryan Whitney out there would absolutely crush. I think add a little flavor, a little personality into hockey panels that we don't normally get to see. I think that would be fantastic.
Okay, you have to pick one or the other, Wit or Biz.
I would have to go Biz.
Really? I'm going Wit.
But I'm going Biz.
Why?
Well, I think I sort of feel obligated to, in the sense that I've had him on my podcast.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, a little bit more of a rapport there. I've never met Ryan Whitney, so it's a little harder for me to say. But I think having those dudes out there, I mean, obviously the success that they've been able to have with Spit and Chicklets and to be able to shine hockey in a new light, I think putting young, clever guys like that on a panel could really breathe a new life into what we're used to seeing through NHL broadcasts. And I think that this is such a great opportunity for TNT to do something really cool and something interesting. And I hope that they seize that opportunity.
Who talks the most on that panel?
Oh God. Well, if we're keeping Bissonnette on, I would have to say probably him. I would say probably him, but yeah, I feel like Gretzky would be like a little bit like laid back and reserved. So I'd have to find the way to like poke and prod to get him fired up. That's sort of like my favorite thing of working on panels is like finding how to like push people's buttons. So I would like to do that with Gretzky.
Yeah, Wayne would just sit back and wait for everybody to have their say. And then he'd come in and just own
it. Drop the knowledge.
Yeah. There.
100%.
There you go. So, yeah. So this is serious. You want to pursue the, it's not just throwing out the tweet and.
No, I would love to do that. I think if that's an opportunity and that's something that's available and that's something that they're interested in doing, I would be all about doing that. I would definitely be open to having that conversation and seeing where they're at and looking to what they're going to do with those panels. And like I said, I mean, I love doing panel shows. I feel like that's something I've been able to really thrive at through my career in WWE. And we're so used to having to like pivot and dealing with different personalities and whatnot. So I think that's something that I would love to bring to a hockey broadcast, and also just finding ways to bring out some more personality from hockey players that we don't always get to see. I think we need that.
Do you think we're a little laid back?
a little bit. We just spice it up a little bit.
What would you do to spice it up in the sense of getting more personality out of them? Is there a tweak, a twinge that you might do to our game, to our sport, to our presentation? Because Vegas, I feel like, and now being immersed in this environment, it's a nightclub and then the puck stops and then it continues. Oh, do you got to go?
Sorry, my husband's just leaving. I just got to say
hi. Oh, where is he?
He's right here.
Say hi. I love you. Hi, John.
He can't hear you. I've got my head.
Ah, right. Good. Your phone's.
He was like pacing his like cars outside. He's got a flight to go catch.
He's a large human.
He is a large man. Okay, so what would I do to the broadcast to kind of spice them up? I think it's adding in different segments, finding ways to have more fun. And I mean, I know it's so ingrained in the hockey culture that it's like very blue collar. It's not all about big personalities. It's very, very reserved. And I don't even want to say like that's like a Canadian thing, because I don't think it's that. I think a lot of Canadians come out all quirky and we've got a lot of weird things to say and have these fun personalities. But I feel like people just assume that hockey is presented in such a way. And it bums me out, especially in the United States, the way that it's perceived, that people don't seem to care about hockey as much. And I think if we're able to focus on more, having more personalities, I think that's something that makes watching the NBA so much more fun, or watching the NFL, watching UFC, watching some of these other sports, is having these athletes become bigger stars. And I think that's something that the NHL kind of struggles with, is having people be actual stars and be personalities and people that you want to gravitate towards. Cause I think that's the thing that makes you want to root for people as well. When you feel like you know somebody and you get a little behind the scenes glimpse. And that's another thing I would love to do too, is do some like personality profiles on some of these guys. I think that's something that I've been able to be pretty good at as well through my career, is being able to have those one-on-ones and finding ways to really highlight who people are and bring out their personality and let them have a little fun and loosen up. So, but yeah, I think there's tons of stuff that I would want to do.
As we record this, we have one more game on our regular season. Darren Elliott and I will be back at the McKenzie River Pizza at the practice rink tomorrow, Sydney National Rink. Is there anything that we should do to have more fun? Like, what? Give me an idea tomorrow that I can work into the broadcast and I can say that was from Renee.
Well, I would say, first of all, add a little fringe jacket on. I think, you know, spicing up the wardrobe is always a good place to start. I think
you don't like the traditional just suit.
I don't mind a traditional suit, but maybe we could add in, you know, some new patterns, maybe like a plaid, a tartan.
Oh, yes.
We could really branch out. I love a good fashion moment. So I think that's something that can add a lot to a broadcast. And maybe sneaking in some brewskis, you know, why not? Why can't we just crack a beer and talk about hockey?
Elliot would do that for sure. Like, I guarantee you. He might put on the hard hat with the two beers up here and the straw.
Great. That's what I think we need more of. That was something I tried to do in WWE for a long time. We'd have the third hour of our broadcast. I'm like, can I be sponsored by a wine company or something? Like, let's do something here. Let's have a little fun. But yeah, I think it's you want to just be a fan watching the sport, and you want to like feel like people want to hang out and have a beer with you. That's how I approach most things in life.
Booze.
Yeah, well, not right now. I'm super pregnant, but
yes. My goodness, that would be bad. Yeah. Well, you got the cookbook going too, and like, how are you doing this? So you're pregnant. You're a mom. You're got the podcast going and the cookbook. Like, how are you balancing all that? And we're trying to find you a job at TNT.
I know, and I'm trying to get another job. I like to work. I'm a busy lady. I feel like my brain never stops moving, and my week will be so jam packed. And then I'll have a couple of days where I'm like, today's kind of an off day. And I can like feel how antsy I get, where I'm like, hey, now what should I be doing? It's really hard for me to like fully settle down, especially now that I've stepped away from WWE and my career is so in my own hands. And I'm like, all right, got to keep moving, keep that foot on the gas pedal. But yeah, my cookbook is dropping. It comes out next week on the 18th. It's going to be available.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it comes out on the 18th, so it's available for pre-sale right now on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, Indigo in Canada, Amazon in Canada as well, and, you know, in the UK and all that. Not that I imagine that there's a lot of people in the UK listening to a hockey podcast, but maybe there is.
You know what? I see the metrics. We're huge. The Chirp is huge in London and up in Edinburgh as well.
Oh, good.
You'd be shocked.
Perfect. Good. My people. I love that. So yeah, I mean, just it's just staying busy. And I love being busy and knowing that I'm about to have a baby in a couple weeks, and that will force me to kind of at least rejig what busy looks like for me in terms of like becoming a mom and adjusting to that life. But yeah. And then having my book come out, I mean, that's a whole other can of worms of, I just really wanted to write a cookbook. So I did. And here it is.
So this was like, nobody came to you with this. You wanted to do that?
Much like my TNT tweet, it started out like that. I like to manifest things on social media. I like to abuse that blue check mark as much as I can. That's really the key.
So you said, I might do a cookbook. And then I said, yeah, do it.
Yeah, basically. It wasn't off of like one tweet. I had been doing this for a while because I think a lot of publishers were like, wait, so you come from wrestling, you're a broadcaster. This has nothing to do with like healthy wrestler meals. It's not at all. It's more comfort food and just like fun stuff that you want to be eating. So I think a lot of people were having a bit of a tough time connecting those dots. And then once I finally found a publisher that was on board, I was like, oh, hell yeah. So we got it done. And it was so much fun just to be able to connect with myself on a writing level and infusing my own personality into the book. And I'm sure you can attest, if you're writing your own scripts for a teleprompter ever, you write like how you speak. So yeah. I feel like that comes through in the book a lot and makes it feel like I'm kind of there hanging out with you.
What's John's favorite dish in the book?
Well, I'd have to, I was going to say the Cincinnati chili. He's from Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So that's got to get a bit of a lean.
Is the Cincinnati chili really from Cincinnati, or did you just name it that because of John?
No. So have you ever had Cincinnati chili?
No, I have no idea what that Cincinnati's a chili place.
It's very different. It's not what you think of for chili. It's not thick or anything. It's super thin. It's very weird. At first you're like, do I like this? So you basically like boil a bunch of water, like, you know,
I can do that.
You boil a bunch of water. You just dump the meat right in, like ground beef. And then it breaks all up. So you don't have big chunks. It comes out very thin. There's no beans. You can put beans on top, but it's not like cooked into the chili. And there's like cinnamon in it. There's dark chocolate, things that you wouldn't expect to be in a chili, but it just has this like really interesting sort of like mole kind of a spice to it. It's pretty good. It takes you a second to grow on though, because you're like, that's not what I think of for chili, but it's served over spaghetti or over a cheese coney. You can have it on a baked potato, I guess. You can like really use it as like a sauce.
I've never heard of boiling hamburger or boiling beef.
Neither had I. And it's super easy too, because you literally just boil the water, you dump in the meat, dump in the onions, dump in some garlic, the chocolate, you dump in all the ingredients. Then you just let it simmer for like 3 hours.
Where do you come up with the idea of the podcast? Because I heard Cowherd doing a promo for you the other day.
Yeah. So when I left WWE and we're here in a pandemic and everybody and their grandmother has a podcast, so I was like, hey, I want one too. And it was just a space for me to be able to have the conversations that I wanted to have. You know, some of the stuff that I maybe wasn't able to do while in WWE. And you come across so many amazing, interesting characters. And I wanted to give people that platform to kind of tell their story and to have these conversations that they might not have on TV regularly, and to just showcase who these people are and what their backgrounds are. And you know, it's not all wrestlers. I have on wrestlers, actors, comedians, had on Bissonette. We have on different athletes and whatnot. And that's sort of the thing for me too, is like branching out just outside of WWE. I mean, that's the basis of it, because it's a thing that I'm known for, obviously. But yeah, it's really cool to just have it growing and just having these fun conversations. There's so many times that I walk away from interviewing somebody that I'm like, man, I just like really enjoyed getting to hang out with that person.
Don't you feel like every interview you do is the greatest interview? Like,
yeah,
you turn off the microphone and Bob, who produces this podcast, we get together and I'm like, that was the best thing we've done. Every week it's the best thing we've done.
It's the best, but like what a good feeling that is. Yeah. Right. And that's what I love about that long form content too. It's not like TV where you've got to hit times and you've got commercial breaks, you've got all these other things you have to worry about. You can literally just throw that all out the window and just have a good chat. And I love that. It's so nice to not have any restrictions or anything.
Yeah, TV kind of sucks.
It's
great. It pays bills. It pays very, yeah, very well. But it sucks compared to radio and podcasting.
There's just so many rules and there's so many different things to be aware of. And it's definitely more draining. That's mm-hmm. for sure. But I miss that. I actually tweeted about that the other day too. I'm like, I miss doing TV. I love being able to do my podcast. I love all these things that I get to do from home. And the fact I'm able to literally work from home and do my podcast and be shilling my book and doing all these things. But I miss sort of that rush of doing live TV. I miss mm-hmm. getting, you know, putting on a cool outfit and getting to go do something fun like that on TV. So I do miss that. I'm over my sweatpants is what I'm saying.
the 30 seconds and then a 10 is one of the most exhilarating things in the world. Just total rush.
The best is you have to be, this is a hard out in five seconds. Okay.
And get two promos in.
Exactly. Please? Yeah. Please read this.
Would you mind? Okay. So yeah. Your pick for the Stanley Cup is what, Renee?
Oh gosh. Who?
We've got 16 spots confirmed and we've got basically all the favorites. Calgary didn't make it and Philly didn't make it, but everybody else is pretty much in. Vegas, Colorado, Wash, Toronto, Edmonton.
Edmonton's looking pretty good, huh?
Yeah, Connor's okay.
He's not bad.
Yeah.
He's doing all right for himself. He's figuring it out. I'm glad he's landed on his feet.
Wait till he really gets comfortable.
How insane, right? Like, who just knocks out a year like that in a condensed season? It's like, excuse me?
Yeah.
Who are you?
Just because he can. Like 100 points, people say I can't get 100 points. You know, I'll do it.
Like, how insane. Yeah. I mean, honestly, part of you like wants to just like root for Edmonton in the sense of like, I want to see what this guy is going to be able to do. You always want to be like a little bit of a homer for a Canadian team as well. You want to see what they're going to do. And I had my first legal beer at an Edmonton Oilers game. So
really?
Yeah.
Explain.
So I was there for a ringette tournament and my uncle took me to an Oilers game and he insisted that I wear an Oilers jersey, which of course can be a little sacrilege when you're coming from Toronto.
Yeah.
And I was 18 at the time. It was a legal drinking age in Edmonton is 18. So I got to drink a bunch of beers with my uncle at a hockey game and it was the best. I don't remember much beyond that.
Drink a bunch, pass out. It's a rite of passage. Yeah. It's great.
It was a rite of passage.
So will you keep us up to date on what's happening with the TNT thing?
Yeah, of course. I mean, listen, once I know something, I'll let you know something.
who is the person that responded to that tweet that you went, whoa, this could go somewhere?
Oh gosh. You know what? I'd have to kind of look at that a little more closely, because I think it was like a lot of the people from like my world, from like the wrestling world, that were like, oh, hell yeah. All right, get on that. But yeah, sort of seeing like different NHL affiliates start to follow me, I was like, oh, I guess they saw my tweet. Sometimes you just got to put shit out there. Am I allowed to swear in here? Sorry.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. It's up to Bob. I don't do anything with this other than sit here and talk. Bob does everything.
Bob looks like he thinks it's fine.
Yeah. Bob won't. Bob only talks. He won't put his face on the camera though.
Coward.
Yeah. Total coward. Bob, you're a coward. Even Renee thinks you're a coward.
Terrible.
The folks on Mahogany Row do not want to see my face. They told me if you're going to be a part of these podcasts, voice only. So I just follow the instructions of the Mahogany Row leadership of the NHL.
Voiceover works where it's at anyways. You're good.
Do you think the wrestling people who watch you on a hockey broadcast would go, that's not the Renee we know. She's got to like jazz it up. Do you think you'd have to tone it down a bit?
I hope not. Mm-hmm. I really hope not. No, I don't think so. I think, you know, because honestly, even the way that I was when I worked for The Score is not that much different from how I was with WWE. I mean, you can get fired up and be passionate about something. And I think that's what makes watching somebody on a broadcast interesting. So if somebody wants to hire me, I hope that they bear that in mind.
we turn this into a total shill. This is great.
Why not, right?
Okay, what are you going to go to any playoff games?
I would love to. Yeah, I would love to check that out. I actually was looking in. I was going to buy tickets. My mom just flew into town from Toronto on Tuesday. Yeah, she's going to be here for when this baby decides she's going to show up. But I was going to go get us tickets to the Silver Knights games. Because again, like I said, it's like I'm really dying to get out some of those games and just check everything out AHL wise. But yeah, I would love to go down and check out some playoff games. Now that T-Mobile actually has... What is attendance capacity they're doing now?
25%? We had 75-67 the last three games.
Okay.
So 75-67, which is almost 50%. Playoffs, I think they're going to be able to go higher.
Great. Yeah. I can't wait to come down. I miss going to an arena. I miss the arena smell. I also love that they sell poutine in the mezzanine.
The only place that I've ever been to that smelled was, well, two places, the Keystone Center in Brandon, because it was connected to the barns. And there's some smell that wafted over from the livestock, and Joe Louis Arena smelled like stale beer. Like that had smell.
Yeah. Joe Louis Arena is gnarly. I mean, that's one of those like fun arenas to walk through. I always loved when we did shows there. I mean, they've got the Little Caesars arena there now, which has a lot, it feels very similar to Barclays. Actually feels a little similar to T-Mobile, honestly, which I think they might be the same builders. Why I know that, I couldn't tell you. I'm big in the construction world. but yeah, Joe Louis Arena is fantastic. I love when an arena just has that, like, you know, there's like sticky beer on the floor and there's old popcorn, old hockey bags everywhere. That's a smell that I will always love. Most people hate it. I love it.
I've been in preparing for the interview. You bring up smells all the time, like hockey bags and different things. You're big on
what I think about.
So give me the for everybody, the podcast, when you publish, and the cookbook name when it comes out, so we can hit off all the things, and when your first show is on TNT.
Great. All of those things are coming up. Okay. So you guys can check out my podcast, Oral Sessions, that drops on Tuesdays and Thursdays, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. My book, Messy in the Kitchen, that is dropping on May 18th. You can buy that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Indigo, if you're up in Canada. And then my first show with TNT, which will be me, Gretzk, Bits, and Punk. That's a lot of like quick little names. I'm going to have to work on that. I'll work on that. But that will be coming to you in the fall of 2021.
I can't wait for the debut. And you're in Henderson. I'm in Summerlin. We'll meet in the strip and we'll hang out. Great. We'll go do something. We'll have the kids and they can run around. My kids can babysit your... So it's
fantastic. Hopefully TNT doesn't like sue me for false information. We'll see what happens.
No, I think, you know, any news is good news, right?
It's fine.
Yeah, publicity.
You're gonna see it. Maybe you won't. Maybe it'll just be an Instagram live. I don't know.
Renee, this has been awesome. Great catching up with you. We'd never met before. So two Canadians living in Las Vegas. Now we're besties.
We are besties. I can't wait to see you down the line and have your kids hang out with my kid, and we'll tear it up on the strip.
If you do come to a VGK game, come and see me. We're in section 117, please.
Yeah,
stop by. Do whatever you do to get through security. And I'm Renee Young.
I'll make my husband lead the
and
way.
He'll John, get yeah, and I'm with him. That's all you do.
He'll do it.
Be well, okay?
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having me on.
I can't wait for John Moxley to walk up to the set that I'm on at T-Mobile Arena. Just curious, Bob, whether he's going to be intimidated physically, just physically intimidated by me. Thanks to Renee Paquette and of course, John, and wish them all the best with their journey and with the new baby there. Renee's projects will all be included in the show notes. So if you missed any of that, we'll make sure that you're aware of that. And of course, Patrick Sharp, he's the best. Cups and Bobbleheads. Cups and Bobbleheads. That sounds like a podcast right there. Cups and Bobbleheads, if he wants to do that. And I'm sure he'd just own it like he does everything else. It's playoff season in the National Hockey League. Looking forward to us. We're going to stay here right through the March. So follow the Stanley Cup playoffs, all the storylines. We'll have it, some interesting interviews. We'll catch up with people in and around the game as we continue this wonderful world of the National Hockey League on the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard. Thanks for listening.